Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio on the BBS Radio Network.
Yes, we're on the new network now.
Isn't it great?
It's fantastic.
We've been paying for it out of pocket. It wasn't great. But now we get to get to a completely new audience.
Bigger audience.
Better audience.
Absolutely better audience.
Yeah. It's going to be wonderful to be able to hit more people, spread the word better.
Absolutely.
Any of our normal listeners, regular listeners, have already heard our intro to Ghost Hunting, but we figured, seeing as how we are primarily paranormal investigators, actually running two different teams out of Michigan,
right?
We figured an introduction to Ghost Hunting would be something great to give to any of the new listeners out there. So, pretty much that's what we're doing today.
Ghost Hunting 101.
I believe we can keep Ghost Hunting 101 to an hour easy. We could spread it all day, for that matter, but we just don't have time for that.
There's just so much to talk about with ghost hunting and what both of our teams do that we can actually spread this out in a week very easily.
I don't know about that.
I think we could.
We might.
Might be able to. But we're going to keep it to an hour tonight.
That's good.
Going to do the highlight.
Always.
Right.
For anyone that's a regular listener of our show, we have went from a two-hour show down to a one-hour show starting this week. And then next week we're going to be airing Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, which is midnight Eastern for all of our local listeners.
Right.
So
that's going to be a great time for us.
That's great.
I'm
originally, when we started
that.
Doing the show, we aired Sunday night at midnight.
Right.
And that was our preferred time slot right there. And Friday night at midnight is probably better, if not just as good. So without any further ado, let's get into Ghost Hunting 101.
Absolutely.
Do you think we should first define what a ghost is? Or what a ghost is? No, we had to know what they are before you step on that.
Right.
Take it away.
Okay, the definition of a ghost is a spirit or apparition of a dead person that appears to the living and returns to haunt a former habitat, the disembodied spirit of a person who has died. You know, it's not just people. There's a lot of myths that only people, you know.
A lot of people believe you only have people haunting.
Right.
I happen to know that my team in particular has done paranormal investigations of a pet cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And we found...
That would be haunted. Animals are
spirits
too.
We found plenty of activity at the pet cemetery. And we actually have reason to believe that part of that was actually human activity. And we believe part of the thought on that when we were talking about it is we were wondering if the human spirit is attempting to find its lost pet.
You know, and that's a very good question.
Because they know that's where the pet was buried.
Right. I mean, a good question that a lot of us get, I mean, you get with your team, I get with my team, I'm sure other teams get the same question. Why would a cemetery be haunted? If you think about it, it's a pretty sad thing to think about. If you die, you're going to haunt, what was this, your six-foot plot?
Right, and I don't believe cemeteries are any more haunted than any other location. I mean, this is a disagreement we've had on the show previously. I've had it with Bob, I've had it with you. I personally am probably one of the few ghost hunters who don't think cemeteries are hotspots. But
oh, I've run into many cemeteries where there's been absolutely no activity whatsoever. None.
I understand why people think cemeteries are haunted. I mean, they're scary, they're creepy, that's where all the bodies are.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, the soul was never in that body,
turned
out it was buried.
Okay.
So, it would seem to me that the ghost would either be a spot that it died, which would more often than not be a hospital or an ambulance.
Or kind of a murder, you know, where
wherever the current murders, the murder, the death happened.
Right.
Or it would be possibly at the funeral home. Because you've got to figure that ghosts and spirits are drawn to energy and live off energy. So it would seem logical that when you have everybody you've ever cared about, pretty much, sitting there and crying over your body, thinking about you and sending all this energy that your newfound abilities as a ghost or a spirit or whatever, you're going to be drawn into all these people, you know, your loved ones. So to me, my honest opinion is I believe that funeral homes should be probably the most haunted place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because you're not going to stick with your body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you might say, hey, that's my body. I need to get back in that. But Most of the time, with the theory is that ghosts don't realize they're dead. So I'm wondering if you would even realize that that's your body. That's something I've sat there and wondered several times. Because people not realize, there's a theory that ghosts don't know they're dead. And funeral homes be haunted. Do people not realize they're looking at their own body? Could there be that amount of disbelief? I mean, I would almost think that you're going to look at it and go, that person looks a lot like me.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, something to that effect.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, cemeteries can hold a little bit of energy if they're, if you think about it, if the funeral's outdoors, it's a great place for the feather death and indoor funeral. Okay.
And I know there aren't many reports of the actual ghost being at the funeral. And mm-hmm. I believe that comes from the fact that if you find a spirit that's actually the energy or life form that's in the human body or any other body,
mm-hmm.
and then the ghost would actually be the physical manifestation of it. Now, you're going to have to, I'm figuring, you know, there's really no reason for a physical manifestation at the funeral. Everyone's
right.
already there paying attention to you, and if you're going off the assumption that, you know, you're not dead, then you really would have no reason to be attempting to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my thought on that. But,
right.
I mean, but just, so far, we got 5 minutes in this film, we've only discussed what a ghost is. This could take a while.
Right. But like I said, a lot of people have the myth of thinking that a ghost can only be a person. But like I said, it could be an animal or an inanimate object. A lot of people don't realize, you know, when you hear legends of like ghost ships and stuff like that.
There are a lot of people that believe that there are ghost ships. My thought on that, because I've discussed this with a few other paranormal investigators,
mm-hmm.
tell me how you feel about this one, but my thought is that the ghost, the ship itself is probably not actually a ghost. My thought is that, you know, the ghost ships always have people on them. They have they have full crews.
Right.
I'm wondering if what the ghost ship is all these spirits, knowing that they're supposed to be on this ship, so they more or less manifest the ship.
Well, that very well could be. I mean, they died on the ship, or that's their whole lives sometimes.
The average ghost hunting manual, mm-hmm. I know I've read a few just to keep up on what's going on in the paranormal world, basically.
Sure.
The average ghost hunting manual, there's a question in there, there'll be something to the effect of, like, why do ghosts have clothes on, or why do they wear the clothes in their period, or whatever.
Right.
And the most common answer for that is that the ghost itself is just pure energy,
mm-hmm.
and due to the fact that it's pure energy, it tells you what it believes it's wearing.
Right.
It says, I should be wearing this, therefore that's what it's wearing.
Mm-hmm.
So it would seem the same kind of concept that it believes it should be on a ship,
mm-hmm.
therefore it shows you a ship.
Well, there's also been cases of hauntings in large buildings. I know we had a hunting one time we investigated where the building, it used to actually be a two-story, and then they eventually ripped out the second story, so it was just like one large building.
Right.
With extremely high ceilings, and they kept saying they kept hearing stuff at a certain level, where that level was where the second floor used to be. Well, if you think about it, same thing.
Right. And,
you know, they're walking where what they're imagining they're supposed to be, you know, not what we are seeing.
Right, and then I personally have experienced that in the house I lived in, two houses prior to the one I'm in now.
Mm-hmm.
Where I saw a full apparition, and what it actually did was it was standing between levels of my floor. It was more or less manifested walking through my floor. Its feet were hanging out somewhere in the, I guess it basically was standing in the air in my living room, the best I could figure.
Right.
But its body, its head was there, and it was obviously trying to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
The story about it's actually on the website, you know, wparanormal.com. You can go to True Ghost Story. You can read the actual whole story because I don't want to go into the whole thing. But more or less, what turns out is that where that house was sitting, originally had been a Potawatomi Indian village. And when I talked to local Okagan Indian chief, because Okagan tribe Potawatomis are the closest descendants to who were here originally, he said that the dwellings that they had probably would have been about that level. So, by the best we can figure, it's walking around in the dwelling that it was in, which happens to be the same place that my apartment was at.
Right.
So, I guess that's a good lead-in. How would you go about investigating this ghost that you saw in the bedroom?
Well, Right.
Is it good to leave it there?
I mean, should we actually lead into the different levels? Because that kind of plays into what we do.
Right.
Okay. The different levels, there's some people out there that do not realize that there are different levels of haunting.
That's
there's different
good
types of haunting.
Everybody knew we'd be wasting their time.
Okay. All right. Yes, there are different levels to the haunting, different types of haunting. First one, of course, for anybody who reads any books on hauntings or ghosts, you're going to hear this word a lot, a residual haunting.
Right.
I like to think of residual haunting is just think of like a VCR that plays itself over and over and over and over and over again.
Right. That basically happens due to the fact that you have so many natural materials that record energy, and the theory is that the energy itself is recorded inside these stones or whatever, and they just keep playing back pretty much for eternity.
Yeah, Einstein even theorized that. That traumatic.
Crazy.
Yeah. A lot of geniuses are crazy.
They're all crazy.
They're all crazy. No, Einstein also said that he believed that traumatic events and stuff like that could, the energy and the trauma from it could actually be imprinted into the atmosphere or be soaked in, as you would say, and actually can replay itself.
Right.
And that's where you get the residual haunting.
Right, and then we have intelligent haunting.
Absolutely, intelligent haunting. I guess, you know, when someone says define an intelligent haunting, the first word that pops into my mind is communication.
Right. If it's actually interacting with anything in the area, then I mean, anything that would not have been there for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you have grandpa who grew up in your building, who lived in your building, and you haven't moved anything, and he's still sitting in his chair, that might still be residual. But if grandpa starts talking to you,
Or
doing something to indicate that he knows you're there.
Right.
And that's evidence that you definitely have an intelligent haunt.
Right. I mean, that goes along the lines of, like, tapping voices and, you know, stuff like that. Because there's how many times do we, questionnaires with people who investigate, want homes or hauntings investigated, that they're like, well, there was this knocking noise, and as soon as I yelled at it or asked it to stop, it did.
Right. You get that quite often.
Yeah.
EVP, that's good evidence of intelligence.
Electronic voice phenomenon.
Basically, for anyone who's not familiar with EVP, it's more or less when you run an audio recording device, you can pick up audio of normally voices that are not there at the time you record it.
Right.
They're almost always in the subaudible range when you analyze the audio tape, but when it's turned into electromagnetic conversion or to digital, this stuff actually appears in the audible range because it has no idea how to analyze it below that.
Okay, now here's a question for you. Do you think, you know, when apparitions appear, do you think it could be more just the residual hauntings where it's just replaying it? Or do you think it could be the intelligent hauntings where they, I don't know, how would you put it, chose to appear? Or do you think it's kind of a mixture of both? Because, I mean,
I believe are probably more often than not residual.
That's my theory too. That they're generally residual.
I would put probably 3/4 of the time they're residual. It's my honest thought on that.
Something's being replayed back over again. Yeah. Because a lot of times when you hear apparitions, they're doing the same thing. They're walking up the stairs all the time. Yeah. Or they're always seen like in one room by one window.
Yeah, I would always have, like with intelligent ones, you hardly ever really get a report of a full apparition.
Yeah.
My
first apparition I saw. Yeah, he wasn't all there.
The one that I saw that I was talking about that was halfway through the floor, that was obviously an intelligent haunting. But that is probably the only apparition I've ever seen that I would consider to be intelligent.
Yeah.
Every other apparition I've ever seen or ever had any evidence of, it always seemed to be residual.
Mm-hmm.
All the intelligent hauntings seem to show up as, you know, myths or... for something else. I mean,
right.
You hardly ever get a full apparition as an intelligent haunting.
No.
The one I always like to get into is in Jackson here in Michigan. There's the Eunice Crouch, I believe her name is. I'm not exactly sure her name.
Crouch murder.
And every year, it now became a common thing.
It's almost like a cult thing now.
There's a cult following. If you believe in ghosts, you show up at the cemetery and you wait for the body, for this woman to walk.
Right.
Essentially, what the storyline is, well, you probably can tell the story.
No, you can.
Okay.
I've never been there.
There was, the story is there was a murder that happened, and for whatever reason, this woman, I can't remember what the reason was, I think it's that she actually died later, but she was buried in one cemetery, and her husband, or it was her father. Father was buried in another cemetery.
Another cemetery or the other side?
No, it's another cemetery.
Oh, okay.
Up in both cemeteries.
Oh, okay.
They're completely different areas. And on the anniversary of the murders, she was seen walking from the one cemetery to the other one.
To her father's grave, wasn't
right.
it? Yeah.
And this happened year after year. Eventually, everybody started showing up to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that makes me... makes me want to make a new categorization. Because my thought is on that one, it is definitely, at the point that she walked from her grave to the other grave, that was intelligent. So it obviously had to have happened that one time as an intelligent haunting.
Well, obviously, how else is she supposed to know where
she never walked,
was, right?
She never walked from her grave to her father's grave when she was alive. That's a given.
Mm-hmm.
So that right there had to have been initially
an intelligent haunting. Right.
But it's happened every year since. So it makes me wonder if that could be the residual intelligent haunting. If maybe what you see every year after that is actually the energy from the original haunt.
You know, and that very well could be. And if you go to paranormal teams throughout Michigan, and some teams outside of Michigan come to this. Like you said, it's become almost like a cult thing.
Right.
Do you realize almost nobody has photographs of anything?
Nothing.
And a residual...
Right, and actually, there's only been one team that I would even consider somewhat reliable that's got any evidence at all that they consider that it's still going on, and that
right.
would be, what is it, Michigan Ghostbusters? Is that their name? Michigan Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
They've reported on their talk show that there was a light that went out, and then they believe that they may have saw an apparition at the same time the light went out and the light came back on.
Right.
Now, if that actually occurred, I'm not saying that it didn't, but I'm saying if that happened and it was paranormal nature, that would indicate that it is still an intelligent haunting.
Right.
That would almost be as if she, every year on the anniversary, says, you know, I need to go see my dad.
Right.
And maybe the reason that she's not being seen anymore is she's tired of being lost.
Right, because the residual haunting is not going to draw energy.
Right. So if it actually drew the energy, then it had to have been an intelligent haunting.
Absolutely.
And I'm not ruling out the possibility that she could every year on that day say, you know, I'm going to go see my dad.
Right.
So there's one thing that I like to try to point out is the fact that just because it happens at the same time doesn't necessarily make it residual.
Right.
You have to get into the investigation process.
Right, exactly.
So since we're trying to talk about investigating and we're still on tights, you better throw out the third type so we can actually get into investigating ghosts.
Okay. The third type that I would list, I'm not sure if you would list, would be a portal.
I don't consider a portal haunting to be a separate type.
See, yeah, a lot of people do, a lot of people don't, so I thought I'd throw it out. Portal haunting, just think, what's the best definition? A doorway, I guess you would say?
But see, that's not actually a haunting. What that is, in my opinion, that's an opening for an intelligent spirit to get out. That's not an actual portal. I don't consider it another classification of haunt.
Right.
You have poltergeist, which is normally considered to be a third
That's
a third classification.
Absolutely.
And do you have a good definition of poltergeist handy?
Absolutely. And for anybody who's not familiar with the actual, where the word poltergeist come from, it's from Germany. Polter meaning uproar and geist meaning ghost.
I mean noisy ghost.
It's a noisy ghost. And it fits. Very well fits. It's basically a haunting, the type of phenomenon which sudden disturbances like loud rapping or knocking, throwing of objects, moving of furniture, raining of stones or other small objects, strange lights, odors, physical assaults upon humans and animals can occur. Mischievous ghost. You don't hear very much, I haven't heard very much of a poltergeist haunting attacking animals in the house. I've heard the animals being terrified.
Right.
But, I mean, have you ever heard of a poltergeist haunting where it's actually doing stuff to the animals? No?
No. Yeah. I have.
No. I mean, I'm sure it has, you know.
I've never heard of an attack on an animal.
No.
You hear about physical attacks from poltergeists all the time.
Sure.
And I mean, we will cover Poltergeist again because being on the new network, I want to make sure that we cover a lot of the topics we've covered in the past for the new listeners.
Oh, absolutely.
But one thing I like to point out is that one of the main theories on Poltergeist is that a Poltergeist is indeed not actually a ghost.
Right.
One of the most common theories on this is that a Poltergeist is more or less PK energy from a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially for anyone who doesn't know what that means, it would mean that, say, somebody's really upset and they have no other way to get rid of the energy, they may unintentionally release it through psychokinetic powers, causing something
to fly
across the room or
something to move.
And you're going to say, since you didn't mean to do it, you're going to assume that it was a ghost.
Right. And, I mean, all the reports of, or I really shouldn't say reports, all the investigations of poltergeists that have taken place by certain psychologists and universities and stuff, where that generally link, they're finding like this link between mostly pretty teen girls, adolescent women.
Yep. And I know that I personally have investigated two poltergeist hauntings. And the first one was been improperly labeled as probably demonic.
Mm-hmm.
We won't get into that necessarily. That's obvious. I mean, it's a haunting that's occurring because of a demon. I mean,
right.
We're not going to get into demons, so we get into angels and demons on a future show.
Right.
And the other one was a poltergeist haunting, and we had two young women that were rooming together up at Western University, which is
mm-hmm.
Western Michigan University, which is right up the road from here, pretty much. And they kept reporting all these poltergeist athletic activities, things flying across the room, bookshelves falling over, clocks that were moving. They said there was an incident where a knife flew across the room at one of the girls. And we went there and we spent 2.5 hours with absolutely no activity, no changes in any of our meetings we're going to go over in a minute here. No changes, nothing at all that would give any indication that there's a haunting.
Okay, question to interrupt you. Were the girls there at the time?
Don't interrupt me, we'll get to it.
Okay.
Patience, like a little grasshopper. She doesn't look like a grasshopper, but apparently she is.
Yeah, okay.
So after 2.5 hours of investigating with absolutely no evidence, they return home, and they asked for a report. And we normally will not give a report on the spot, but since there was no evidence at all, I really did not see the pleasure of return visit.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them, you know, we have nothing. We have no evidence whatsoever that there's anything going on here. I said, it doesn't mean that there's not, but at this moment, we have absolutely no reason to call this haunting. If you'd like us to come back and do an investigation later, we'd be happy to do a return investigation. Still no charge for this, you know, what we told them.
Okay.
And no sooner do we say there's no evidence of any kind of a haunting, but immediately after that, we have a bookshelf fall over. Here's loud banging noise upstairs. So basically, as soon as we told these young women that there was no haunting, everything started happening. And on every return visit we had there, there was never any activity until they were in the house. We could not convince them that they were actually causing it.
That one of them could be causing it, right.
We couldn't convince them of that.
Right.
What they actually were trying to say was that it followed them wherever they were going.
Which it would
if it was PK energy.
Yeah.
And that's part of what people define as poltergeist activities. They will actually follow you. And that's largely due to the fact that it is probably more than likely PK.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've covered all the levels.
Sure.
Let's get into, for the last half an hour of our show, how do you investigate the paranormal?
Okay.
How do you do it?
Your clock right.
Yes.
Okay. How do we investigate paranormal? Well, see, this one can be fun because we got two separate teams here.
Right, but we have almost the same power.
Somewhat. Well, yeah, pretty much.
Essentially.
Essentially.
Same practices, slightly different ways of documenting, basically, that comes down to.
Yeah, but my team is changing how they're...
you're going to my policies.
Okay,
you're essentially going to be running your team the way I run mine.
Kind of, yeah.
At the meeting, basically, what you're doing is you're adjusting your team to run the way that I run mine.
Right.
Which is kind of funny, in a way. We won't get into this, but...
know, it's hit or miss. You learn from mistakes. You learn what works and what doesn't. I know when I started out, I was a big believer of when somebody asks us for an investigation, and I think it's on Rob's website as well. I'm not sure. He just sent it out. There are questionnaires where I have the client fill out. On my team's website, it's online, of course. I'm not sure if yours is online or you just give it to them.
What I do is I have people email me and then I contact them. But I am getting ready to actually put it on the site to be able to fill it out.
Okay, so when someone requests an investigation, there's an online questionnaire on my team. Whether you get it online or not.
It doesn't matter how you get it. I want always a questionnaire.
Right.
To get some background information.
Right. We have to get background information.
If nothing else, you do a phone call interview. Which is a lot of times what I prefer to do is actually talk to the person on the phone rather than get the information from the website.
Yeah, and my team kind of does a little bit of both. They do the questionnaire, and then my co-founder calls them and interviews them based on what they said on the questionnaire. So the questionnaire is a great tool, regardless of how you give it to the client. It is a great tool because it really does let you know ahead of time. It kind of gives you an indication what you could be investigating, whether residual intelligence, you know, gives you the potential hotspots for the building, for the home.
Right.
You know, if it seems like all the activity is happening in only one room, well, then perfect. I mean, yes, you're going to investigate the rest of the house, but...
I personally will not allow that to interfere with an entire building investigation. I mean, unless we're looking at, say we're looking at a massive building where it's improbable, I mean, impractical to do an entire investigation.
Right.
That I would specify, I would go to that specific area. But I personally would say cover everything, no matter what.
I mean, we do cover, on our questionnaire it does say, or I think it used to say, what do you feel is the most active room, you know, in the building, in the house, or the whatever, or the more active rooms. But my team investigates the entire building as well. I mean, it would be stupid to investigate one room, you know.
Why would it say that with your plan?
But the questionnaire is a fantastic tool. What I started in the beginning then is I also started an initial visit where I visited the home, the building,
whatever. That's almost always
given. Sometimes.
Most of the time.
I mean, if it's like,
let's just get past what we've done. Let's just say should be done. And we'll just assume that what we do should be done because we're always right.
Okay. Interview the client once you're face-to-face.
Of course. Make sure the story stays the same. See if there's anything new.
Right. Absolutely. I always set up, you know, I don't know how to call it, like a command center or something.
Let's cover what equipment we do first before we talk about how you get it all into the computer.
Okay.
You know, tools?
All right. I wasn't going to talk about how to get it all into a computer.
You were just saying a command post. You're like, I set up this command post, and I, like, command people to do stuff. It's like, oh, my golly, people. Just put it all in the computer. Computers are great.
I command people to do stuff, okay?
You said command post.
You didn't sound like a dictator.
You are. But that's okay. So basically, what would you want to do to do an investigation? One thing that I've never seen any paranormal investigators go without is a metal detector.
Okay. I thought you were going to do more obvious, but okay.
More obvious than
more
the camera.
Exactly. The camera. That is like the most obvious piece of equipment you're going to have for an
investigation. It is also the least reliable. I believe that the camera is responsible for more false positives than anything else in the world.
Absolutely.
Everyone likes to believe this. Let's think that seeing is believing, and I have to disagree when it comes to the camera, because I know personally from my own experience, when I started my team back 12 years ago, we used to report every single drop of rain, every speck of dust, everything that would show up in a video on film, automatically had to be a ghost. If I didn't see it and it showed up on there, that was evidence that there was a ghost.
Absolutely. We know better now.
Everybody does that when they first start out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how many tons of you can pictures on a website of, like...
Everybody seems, well, just, you know, they'll post it. That could be the only thing they go off of. look at this. I went to this cemetery after dark when it was cold and foggy, and I caught this mist.
Duh.
But they don't bother considering that it could be their breath, it could be
the fog.
it could be the fact that they were kicking up dirt.
Right.
So obviously everyone uses a camera. I think it should more or less be thrown out from a basic tool. Yes, you need it. No one's going to believe you if you don't have any pictures. And I believe that the entire reason that ghost hunters use cameras is so they can try to prove something to other people.
I mean, I've caught some pretty good shots of stuff.
Yes.
Bears
once in a while.
Stop.
That's another thing. With cameras, if you happen to have even a single hair across the lens, I was picking on Nicole here for a second.
Yeah. You always pick on me.
If you happen to have like a single hair across the lens, a lot of people get excited. They're like, look at this. It's a portal. It's got to be a portal.
Vortex.
That too. You can get both. People say portal depending if it goes. See, more or less, here's one thing I noticed. People will say it's a portal if it goes up and down across the lens.
Yeah.
And if it goes across, if it goes sideways, they call it a vortex.
I never noticed that.
If you check people's websites, that's almost always the case.
That is.
And a hair, when it is right on the lens of the camera, will appear to be about 2 inches wide because it is right on the lens. Camera straps are almost always reported as vortexes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's like the most common.
Absolutely.
You're stealing my word.
I've heard you say it about 20 times today. I figured I absolutely should use it too.
Okay.
And we're not talking about yet.
Next piece
of equipment. More reliable, yet also misused by every team I've seen, including Catholic ghost hunters.
Video?
No.
Oh.
Catholic ghost hunter cameras. I've already covered video. I said cameras. You know, I figured video too.
Well, okay. I was going to explain. Light vision.
Get to it. Just cover your darn cameras. We only have like 20 minutes here, so cover every camera you can think of.
I was just going to say the best way. No camcorder. I would say it's Sony because of the night staff and night vision. That's all I was going to say.
No, it isn't.
Whatever.
For anyone that hasn't listened to the show, we do try to have a little bit of a sense of humor. You know, a little, ribbing here and there.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Morning show type format. Yeah. Got to have a little bit of fun.
Yeah. You know, the paranormal morning show that airs late at night because real ghosts are in the dark will be more true because we'll be back late at night. Our original headline will once again work.
All right. What were you going to say?
Oh, you just handle it. You apparently know so much about the equipment. Okay.
What was the next one we're going
to say? Could you explain to me when you thought you saw Taft misuse a video camera when I was trying to say that Taft commonly misuses their video cameras?
Oh, you mean misuses this piece of equipment?
Yeah, I said that they misuse this piece of equipment. You said video cameras? When have you
thought
Taft misuses the video camera?
I've seen video before, so.
They might misanalyze it, but they don't misuse the equipment.
Well, if you're talking about Taft misusing things, we must be talking about EMF detectors.
Or voice recorders, one or the other. More or less.
EMF.
More or less, it's the EMF.
Right.
Now, EMF, electromagnetic field. The theory is that a ghost will always manifest.
You can't talk today.
Manifest its own electromagnetic field because it is more or less pure energy.
Right.
So if you get a spike in electromagnetic fields that has no other source, it is common to believe that this is evidence of a haunting.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look around and make sure that you don't have any electrical wires, power substations, buried wires.
Yeah.
Microwaves around. If you happen to be below a refrigerator, forget it. I mean, you have to look for any kind of place where energy can be coming from naturally. And one thing I've noticed with a lot of teams, including TAPS, is that they will go near a wall or near a ceiling or something, and they'll go, oh, wow, we've got this major spike. We've got activity here. And when you look, you can obviously see that it's not changing. It's a stationary stationary EMF recording. And they'll do it over and over. Like, every time it's coming, it's spike.
They did it Wednesday night on the show.
We talked about that. Right. They're like, yeah, we got a spike here. Now, that's part of why you have to have other pieces of evidence. And I have to give him credit because he said, I'm getting constant EMF readings here. Quick, get a temperature reading.
Right.
Which can bring us, let's give, actually, let's cover EMF a little bit more.
All right.
We've already talked about things that you can make mistakes on.
Mm-hmm.
Any source of electromagnetic field.
Sure.
And you have to keep in mind, with everything being electric now, you have electromagnetic fields generated from things you would never imagine. You're going to go near a computer, there's going to be a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
I know in my basement, my fish tank gives off one of the biggest electromagnetic fields that you always have in the basement. And you would not assume that a fish tank is going to have this big, huge electromagnetic field, but it does.
Yep.
Obviously, as I said, the refrigerator.
The
refrigerator is
pretty much any appliance.
Right, especially the refrigerator.
But those refrigerators are really strong, right.
So if you happen to get a reading and you happen to be, anywhere behind a refrigerator in the next room, make sure that you're not getting the reading from the refrigerator.
Absolutely.
Because just because it's not in the same room does not mean that it's not what's giving you the feeling.
Uh-huh.
Because it does not care that there's a wall in the way.
Right.
Then you have, of course, the laser thermometer, non-contact laser thermometer, mm-hmm. which works...
Singling to me. Okay. Basically, the whole reason for that, when a manifestation occurs, when it pulls energy from the atmosphere, it also will lower the temperature. So its infrared laser thermometer will take instantaneous readings for basically the atmosphere wherever you point it at.
And any surface.
Well, yeah.
It has to get off surface. It can't actually do an air reading,
mm-hmm.
which could work out. The ghost is there. It becomes a surface. So you're all set.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Groovy.
Anyways, I consider it a very important tool. It's one of my favorite ghost hunting tools.
Which is great. Fun to play with.
Not just because it's fun to play with.
I like thermometers.
Yeah.
You take readings of everything.
Right.
Anything at all. Ghosts, walls, refrigerators. There comes a refrigerator.
I'm thinking, so many places with the thermometer, a little bit too much.
Well, actually, there's a point to it. If you're going to be doing paranormal investigations, you have to make sure that you know your equipment, and you have to know more or less what you're going to come across. Because if you're using the laser thermometer and you walk into a building, you haven't really used it. You get near a window and you go, oh, wow, I've just got a 15-degree temperature drop. It must be a ghost. When in reality, you've got a bad window.
Yeah, it's reading the cold draft coming in through the window.
I've experienced people doing that
so have
several
I.
times.
So have I. One thing that I stress, and I will say I've never noticed Pastor really doing this, is what I call base reading. I think it's important.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
To go
in, base reading.
Yeah, to go into the building.
I don't do a room by room like you guys do. I do a basic general. Unless I get to a room, if everything's within a couple degrees, I'll just say that is the normal base reading.
Right.
But if you have some room that has abnormal temperatures, like we had one house that we investigated, every room was 75, with the exception of the bedroom, which was 69. So we made sure to note that the base reading was 75, and if you got into the bedroom, it was 69.
Right. Right, but I feel that's very important, because then you...
You have to have something to go off of.
Yeah, absolutely. You're never going to know if you're getting an honest-to-goodness temperature variance if you don't know what the norm is.
Right.
And I have heard of many other paranormal teams that will not do that. Whatever temperature they get, how I look at how can you honestly investigate any type of a structure without knowing what's going to be normal to begin with?
I don't know. How could you?
I don't think you could. To do
an honest investigation. If you don't know what's going on in the area, you can't.
Normally, right. And I have heard of many paranormal teams, even right here in our own state, that just go in cold turkey. They don't, they don't try to figure out what is normal to begin with.
Four teams that I've noticed.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Any other piece of equipment that you would We did a little bit of EVP. I mean,
voice recorders. We're gonna
voice recorders.
You're gonna want with voice recorder. There's several options. There's several good things about this, honestly, in my opinion. And that is, it gives you documentation of what you actually did. For one thing, if you happen to run it all the time, which if you're gonna do EVP, it's probably not all that practical to run your audio all the time.
All the time.
I'm good at analyzing EVP. You're probably better at explaining how it works and what and how to take it. So.
Well, I mean, there's. You go to each. How do I put this? It seems like each paranormal team has their own technique. There are so many different techniques that people throw out there to try to capture electronic voice phenomenon. I mean, there's one that says that all you do is you set it down in an empty room and you leave and you make sure nobody comes in. And that's the only way that they said that you can
capture.
I do
see that one occasionally.
Right. There's some that says you have to take it with you, walk around, and ask questions. There's others that say you need to stay in a stationary position to ask questions.
I find them all to work.
Right. There's some that says you're supposed to go in a stationary position and start yelling at the...
Show yourself on
right.
the tape.
Demand to be
now,
shown.
I know that a lot of teams have started leaning toward demanding that ghosts do what they want them to do.
Almost to the point of threatening.
Right. I know when we were at West Virginia Penitentiary, not to badmouth him, but Majda was down there giving lessons on how to do EVP, and they're sitting there yelling at the resident ghost that he needs to talk to them. He needs to give them a sign. He needs to right now.
Wasn't he called a coward?
Come on, coward. Talk to
right.
Me. Come on, talk to you, coward. I mean, you do not sit there and threaten the ghost.
Right. I really did not find that very professional when we were there. And, yeah, they were sitting there calling the spirit, resident spirit or spirit.
There was one particular one they were talking to at that point.
Right. Yeah, calling them a coward and you better show yourself. And wasn't it a couple of times he's screaming, come get me?
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, I'm like, wow. You know, not only was sitting there demanding and screaming, but he would sit there and he'd demand something, and then he'd turn around and hurry up and demand something else. If you're trying to capture EVP, you got
to
be
curious. You have to wait. If you ask a question, you have to wait a little bit for it to answer.
Well, isn't what we're finding...
standard is
supposed
to be 10 to 15 seconds.
Right, 10 to 15 seconds. Because a lot of times they will not answer you immediately. If you ask, what is your name, they're not going to immediately give you the name. And it could be 5-10 seconds later, suddenly you'll get a voice or a whisper that'll say something.
I've actually found times when I was doing EVP when I asked a question, and I've waited, and I've asked another question, and received the answer to the question before.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to make any sense. Like, it was...
Yeah.
Anyone here? And then you wait, and then... Wait, and then you just be like,
What is your name?
And it's, yes. What?
Yeah.
Yes? And people sit there and try to analyze this forever because they'll assume that the question had to have been answered right then. What is your name? Yes. Something like, his name's Jeff?
Right.
Or, you know, they try to assume that whatever they hear right away has to have been the answer.
Question that you
that's
just...
not always the case. They don't always get to answer the question.
I would say majority of the time, you're not going to get it.
Probably not.
You're not going to get it. You know, I often sit there and wonder about some of these paranormal teams, like, there was one paranormal team, I mean, I'm not going to mention them, there was one paranormal team that went to a house in Iowa that is reportedly extremely haunted. There was axe murders that took place there. And they said in one night...
Axe murder house?
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. Well, I'm not naming the team because several teams have been in there. But, I mean, they came away, after one night's investigation, they came away with 85 EVPs. I'm sorry, you know, I honestly don't see what that's possible. A lot of EVP experts say there's just no way.
I would say that it is possible, but extremely unlikely. This team goes to a lot of locations and always gets multiple EVPs.
I mean, an unbelievable amount of EVPs.
It's not just normal multiple. I mean, we're not talking like to get 15 or 20. We're talking
30, 40.
Almost up to 100.
Right. I mean, yeah. For that, you really got to take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
You know, for that. we consider it a great investigation if we come away with one good EVP. I consider that great evidence.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, when it gets
I actually have EVP. I can normally capture more than one in a day.
Mm-hmm.
But that is sitting there and having my entire focus be working on EVP.
Right.
And I have no idea why. I mean, maybe. I think ghosts must be possessive, because I would say that 75% of all EVPs ever recorded are get out.
Right.
Get out.
Right.
Probably get annoyed. You know, you're sitting in their bedroom saying, are you here?
Get away from me. You're annoying
me. I'm here to help.
You're annoying me.
How can I help you?
Get out.
Get out.
Get out. Get away. You know.
I don't want you here.
No. Right.
All right, we've got about 15 minutes left in the show.
Remember, we're running late.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. With 15 minutes over, we have about 15 minutes left in the show.
I was told by BBS's clock, which is a little bit different than yours. That's why I asked about your clock.
No, it's actually the same.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay.
So, other pieces of equipment. We've got the obvious ones. We've covered the main ones. We've covered the camera, the video camera.
Right.
The EMF. Your laser thermometer.
Some teams use motion detectors.
Motion detectors, yeah.
I've never had good luck with motion detectors. I found a cat one. You found a cat.
Oh, and I verified that one of our Demona Contis also has raccoons in the attic.
Okay, so it's different spotting animals then?
Yeah. You can find some hidden animals with motion detectors.
Okay.
I guarantee it.
Oh, here we go. I got a hilarious one that we found. And we were investigating this townhouse.
Does it have to do with motion detectors?
No. Let's go to another piece. Well, I wouldn't even consider this a piece of equipment, but now we bring it with us, and it's absolutely hilarious. One of the things that they were complaining about this haunting was this horrible odor that would always come from one section of the townhouse. It was always in the same spot. No matter what they did, they shampooed the carpets, they painted the walls, you know, the management company that owns the townhouses kept coming in and replacing the carpeting, you know, replacing the flooring, whatever, and the smell would come back. All right. So one of my investigators had one of these, okay, what do you call it? I don't want to say infrared lights. You know, you see them like on CSI, the blue light.
The black light.
Or black light?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they're supposed to show if your pet has been urinating somewhere and it'll light it up. It'll make a whistle. Okay. It's actually called a stink finder, this light. Okay?
So that's the commercial name for one brand, yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. That's commercial name for one brand.
Light.
Which we thought was very funny. So, anyways, we go on this investigation, and of course, one of the things you have to do in the investigation is, you know, I hate to use the term debunking because apps made it so big, you know, but this is just one of the things that we had to prove what was going on. You know, with this horrible smell, and I will admit, you go up to the townhouse, you went up to the loft area, and it did stink. It really did. It was really, really bad. When my investigator decided to turn off the light and use one of these lights that he had...
Are we essentially telling people he needs to use black lights?
No, but I'm saying that this might end up being somewhat of a thing to take with you.
Okay.
I mean, because we totally debunked why we found out that the 4-year-old is getting up in the middle of the night every night and urinating on the wall.
Okay.
The woman thought it was part of a haunting.
Okay. So,
I mean,
is pneumonia a common cause for a haunting?
No. But, I mean, she really was terrified that there was, like, this dead body in the wall or something. She was convinced. And all it was her 4-year-old. I'm just saying that sometimes piece of equipment that you would never guess that would be useful in an investigation ends up being useful.
Unfortunately, I forgot what legitimate piece of equipment I was getting ready to talk about.
Which was?
I said I forgot. I was actually going to cover another legitimate piece of equipment.
Okay. The motion detectors you got on.
Right.
I never had luck. You had luck with animals.
Right. A lot of people use dowsing rods. If you use dowsing rods, it has to be used by somebody who has the ability to properly use it.
Who knows what they're doing.
You have to know what you're doing. One thing I've noticed with dowsing rods, I mean, personally, from my background, I do occasionally use dowsing rods.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, I'm for anyone who doesn't know, I happen to be a Wiccan high priest. I am more or less trained in using dowsing rods and other things as an effect for to find unknown variables. But you have a lot of people who will just stand there and, you know, they'll walk around, and as soon as they have any kind of movement, then they go, that's a ghost, it's a ghost.
Oh, absolutely.
I hate to tell you, but properly using dowsing rods, if you walk over an underground water pipe, they're going to join.
Yep.
You walk over buried water, they're going to join.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find any variation in the electromagnetic field to a much better degree, a much slighter degree than you can determine with any piece of scientific equipment that I've found.
Right.
You have pendulums, also useful for a trained person. However, if you have the average person try to walk around carrying a pendulum, you're going to get all this back and forth motion, and everyone's going to go, oh, it's haunting, and it's obviously not.
Right.
Any other? Okay. Night vision goggles are quite often used. They're expensive.
They're very expensive, though, yeah. I mean, some of this equipment, some of the EMF detectors you can get online for, like, $15.95, you know, the real simple one.
Trifiometer, it lets you check for microwaves. What else does it check? Check for microwaves.
Ambient?
I don't know, but I don't remember what the three fields are.
Right.
And everyone has a tri-field meter, but no one really ever takes it off of the electromagnetic field reading.
Right.
There is use for it. I have taken it off of I've taken it into the other field, one of the other fields. But for the most part, the tri-field is a $100 piece of equipment that does the same job as a $15 piece of equipment.
Absolutely. You know, and some of these teams are like, we have to get a tri-field. We have to get a
tri-field. We had to get a tri-field.
You know, my team did too when we first started. It's like, tri-field was like the goal for a piece of equipment. You know, you were not a team unless you bought a tri-field meter.
Right. We had to get the tri-field.
It was one of the worst investments.
Yeah, it's been a complete waste of our money.
Absolutely, because the EMF detectors that you run to Radio Shack or get them online for $15.95 work just as good, and sometimes better.
Right. You don't have to have nearly the skill to use it as you
do. You just walk around, if the light goes off, boom, get out, yeah. Gauss meters, same
Gauss
thing.
Meter
They're
is,
easy to
the
use.
The Gauss meter is the easy to use EMF that I actually find to be one of the most effective. The only problem I have with the actual Dr. Gauss meter is that it emits a loud noise. I do not like my EMF detector to screech at me. I mean, sure,
right,
good
really
if you're trying to show people, like, hey, look, there's something here. Look, it makes a noise.
Yeah, if you're in a kid's room or something, it makes noise. Yeah, that's fine. For the scare tactic, it works great.
Yeah. But honestly, if you're trying to get any other evidence, this screeching noise in your EMF detector
is
negative. I mean, it's going to give you other,
right.
Yeah.
It's a good piece of equipment. It's really good. It's just, it can be very annoying.
You got that right.
Yes, I know. I've got one. I think you do, too. I think we're both guilty of having that one, too.
That's the first piece of equipment we bought.
Right, exactly.
Bought it from, I don't even know where I bought it at.
I bought mine online.
That's
all I remember.
I remember looking, I'm like, hey, this thing's cheap.
Right.
Flashlights, you gotta have a flashlight.
Yeah.
Don't run around with those little lights on your head. I don't care.
If I ever have to do
an investigation with you, please do not put the light on your forehead. I will call you a lighthead and I will not work with you.
So we had people in West Virginia Bank Desert.
The funny thing about this is my co-founder who has quit the team, rejoined it, quit, rejoined. We won't get into that. She is a firm believer in being a lighthead. And
absolutely.
I hate lightheads.
Yep.
Because anywhere you look, that light goes. Which means if you happen to look up at me, you are shining a flashlight directly into my face.
Those things are so annoying at the penitentiary.
Also, when you use your flashlight, always use the red filter. I know your team doesn't necessarily do this.
Yes, but we're going to start.
But the red filter will not interfere with IR cameras, for one thing.
Absolutely.
It's not interfere with night vision cameras.
Mm-hmm.
It's not interfere with human night vision.
Right.
So if you are not sure what you're seeing and you turn on a red flashlight, you're not going to, when you turn it off, be blinded. You instantly readjust to the dark.
Yep.
So that's a definite plus. You have people that go out there with a million candle power flashlight, and they're like,
oh, that light
up the home. Just trying to stun the ghost or something. It's like, if I have enough light power, it's going to be bound to be stunned.
Oh, absolutely. We've had people show up with those, yeah.
I went with another team to Gettysburg, and they made a big joke on their website about all these people using these million candle power flashlights. And let me tell you one thing. They use the million candle power flashlight all the time.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go. And it is considered important to keep the thing charged. Do they use a red lens? No. Would there be any point to a red lens and a million candle power flashlight? No. No, the flashlight, it's good.
It's great to send the military right-angled ones because it comes with the lenses.
Yeah.
And they're perfect. They're absolutely the perfect
brightness.
That's the one that we definitely recommend.
One thing that a lot of teams disagree on how important they are is two-way radios. A lot of teams believe that they should do all kinds of communication saying, I'm here. I believe it interferes with EMS. But I do think that there should always be one person who is going to have theirs on constantly.
You have to have
a safety person who's always going to monitor the radios. Okay. And they're going to be someone who's not wandering off, not going anywhere. And then every member should have a radio of some sort so that if they have any sort of a problem, they can call in for help, they can call in whatever. But for safety purposes alone, you should always have a radio. A lot of teams go off of, you know, that way they can call in other equipment. You know, you have activities, you can say, I need people here, and everyone has a radio so they can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, when I run an investigation, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, because I have had things from a radio show up on my EVPs, and I was, quite frankly, PO'd. I was angry.
Right.
That I had to go through all the time to analyze this piece of audio to find out that Joe Blow thought he saw something in another room.
Right.
I'm like, that's great. Thank you.
I know.
Unless you have someone in the next room with a radio on, and you're trying to do EVP in your room, and you just hear their radio going beep, or, hey, I'm doing a radio check. I'm like, no, thank you. Radio check. Thanks. That's great. EVP is ruined.
Right.
I'm not even going to mention that there is a team in Michigan who has an EVP on their website that is a radio check. There is.
Okay.
There's a Michigan-based team. And it says, is anyone here? And you hear the words, this is a radio check. I'm like, okay. They have on their unknown audio. I cleaned it up. It is. This is a radio check. We have, here's another thing. Everyone out there, if you don't find evidence, please do not fake it.
Found
the paranormal team out there.
Here in Michigan.
They might say that we're picking on them because, you know, there might be some bad blood between a couple of members or something.
Right.
But what they have is computer-generated orbs
on their
screen.
Yeah.
To the point where you can see the focus arrows on the orb that they forgot to take back out. And they're like, look at all this activity we got.
If you don't get activity, please be honest and say, hey, you know, if you want a list that you investigated this location, fine. We investigated this location, we found no evidence. Be honest and say you did not find evidence. Don't create evidence.
Right. Never fake it. What's the point?
Absolutely.
What's going to happen eventually is no one is going to believe anything any team ever does.
You want to know something?
Time's up. I know.
See?
We have other equipment left that we haven't even covered.
I know. See, this is what I'm covering.
Okay, one thing we should have mentioned first. Always bring your open mind clear.
Yes.
Don't drink. Don't get high. Don't go there thinking that there's not going to be anything. You can be a skeptic, but don't go there with a negative attitude because a negative attitude can give you negative evidence. It's not good. So keep an open mind. Bring an analytical mind. And I think that's pretty much... That's a pretty good introduction.
I think that's a great introduction to Ghost Hunting 101. One thing I'd like to point out for anyone who's a listener, we don't only talk about ghosts.
We cover everything paranormal.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be talking about UFOs.
Conspiracy theories, even.
Oh, yeah, conspiracy theories, cryptozoology, I mean, and we will...
If it's a paranormal topic,
we will cover it. And not just us. We will also have, you know, authors and experts and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll talk to some very fascinating people on the show.
No, absolutely.
And so far, we've only had one complete bad guy.
So, yeah, we will have all sorts of guests on the show as well, talking about, I mean, every aspect of the paranormal you can think of.
Right. We're going to start working on getting our schedule done pretty soon here.
Right.
Anyone that's been a listener knows for a while there, we had guest after guest every week. It did get a little overwhelming.
Yes.
So we're going to probably kind of go about what we're doing, what, every other week with a guest. Guest topic, probably.
Probably.
A reminder, everyone, we will be on next week on Friday at 9 p.m. Pacific, which is midnight Eastern.
Right.
So we are once again airing at the witching hour.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Back to old times.
Yeah,
so.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think you've ever been on the show at midnight.
No, never been on show at midnight.
Right, so, I'd say until next week.
Right. Until next Friday.
Yeah. But until next Friday, what?
Okay, guys, it was a great program. We're running to the end here. We got to wrap her up in the next 30 seconds. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we got to wrap her up in the next 30?
Yeah, we've wrapped it up.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
Well, then we're still on the air. I didn't even realize. Okay, folks, we're coming with Ken Lasser.
What was that?
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.